Blog Talk Radio. Canned Laughter and Coffee with Renee Bernard. Women's fiction, romance, and laughter.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Canned Laughter and Coffee with Renee Bernard. I am Renee Bernard, and tonight we have a very cool treat for you, which we were laughing in the pre-show. This has become like an annual event. I have C.E. Lawrence on the program with us tonight. Welcome, C.E. Lawrence, to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Renee. I'm speaking to you. I'm speaking to you from a continent away.
Here on the right, on the East Coast, or the right coast, as we like to call it.
No pride there. No, you know, no particular.
No, I actually love the part of the country that you live in. I, you know, being in Northern California, the first question I had for myself was, now why don't I live here again?
Yeah, what?
And then I remember
open.
The earthquakes, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's it.
No. Northern California. I'm well away from that silly old fault line. I'm in the Sierra Nevada, the foothills of the Sierra Nevada mountains. My windows are open.
Now that's not fair. Now I'm jealous. Okay,
that
now
was mean.
That's, that was a step
to
too far. A step too far.
I went too far. I'm sorry.
I'm a little jealous.
You got that East Coast energy going. You know, you're in the thick of things. It's
that's
exciting. Broadway show. They don't come here. We don't have that. You know.
Oh, you don't?
No. We just read about it. You know. The Bay Area, and that's what I'm in.
Hey, listen,
country.
They've gotten so expensive. That's what I do. I read about it.
I'm getting goats. That's how far off the. We're about to get goats. I kid you not. Like, this is my life.
I love goats.
I never
with a little bit of
really?
Sage and vinegar. Here we call it chivo.
Oh. Here we call them lawnmowers. So it'll be a weed eater. That's what a weed eater looks like. They have horns and they hit the dog.
That's so cool. Actually, we have baby goats up in Woodstock where I live during the summer in the art colony, and all the painters and writers walk down the hill and pet the baby goats and give them grass. It's very adorable.
I'm hoping it's a good experience for the kids and not, you know. I never thought I would be a pioneer. I'm just going to say I never thought I'd be a pioneer woman. Here I am. Goats and chickens are in my future. That's all I have to say about that. I'm hoping. Let's pray. But before we, I could talk about goats and chickens, but I kind of want to talk about this. You are just cranking. So here comes the latest, and you've got sort of a series going right now. Am I right? And this one is Silent Kills.
Yes, the third book in the Lee Campbell thriller series is Silent Kills, and you may notice that so far all the titles have the word silent in them, and, if the series runs too long, we're going to be in trouble, but, hey, it works for other people.
So how many titles ahead have you planned? And when you watch television and somebody uses the word silent in a sentence or comes up with a phrase, do you write it down quickly and go, that could be a
book? Oh, definitely. Yeah, and then I say, can I have that? That's what you say. That's what writers say to each other. It's like you're at a party and someone says something really clever. It's like, can I have that? You gonna use that? It's like Paul Reiser in Diner when he wanted everyone's sandwich. You know, he'd eye everyone's sandwich. He's like, you done with that? Can I have that? Writers are like,
or an intellectual game of Go Fish. Are you using that? Because I could use that. Are you collecting too? Because I need that.
Exactly.
Oh,
it's true though. It's true. We're such cannibals.
In a way, you hope is gentle. If you've got a good circle going, like you actually ask permission before you feast on someone else's, creative.
Yeah, especially if it's their family. Like if I'm teaching a writing class and one of my students comes up with this great story, I kind of pause and I go, you planning on using that?
Yeah, are you?
It's terrible. You've only got one family. You run out of your own.
I'm going to ask because you're writing, these fantastic killer thriller. I'm sorry, but it's very, very fun in a way, isn't it? To get to write about offing people. Is there like a secret pleasure in that, or no?
Yes,
or is that
actually,
just me? Like
so,
I would take
no,
secret
no,
pleasure
no.
in that.
I really think I've been hanging out with thriller writers. You know, going to Thriller Fest, going, you know, I hang out with the MWA people, that's Mystery Writers America, and the ITW, which is International Thriller Writers, and I was at Cape Cod at the conference last year teaching, and I taught a week course on crime writing, and I'm going to San Miguel de Allende to teach at that conference.
Wow.
And I'm surrounded by people who are into crime, and, you know, they're the nicest people. And,
yeah.
and they look
like Sunday school teachers and just really nice people. And then they come up with these, you know.
I think that there's something, I resisted this notion for a long time until my therapist finally convinced me. I think that there's something liberating and sort of cathartic about indulging in dark fantasies on the printed page, and it kind of it allows you to release aspects of yourself that might not have an otherwise socially acceptable outlet.
Yes.
And you know, I've never dreamed about, I've never really fantasized about, you know, killing people that I didn't know. This is like, which is what most serial killers do, and that's mostly what I write about is serial killers. But who among us has not had a violent fantasy at one time or another?
Yeah.
No, you're in Northern California. You've got all the bliss. You've got the bliss hormones
not
in the air.
We long to put in a little tragedy and angst, and there are occasionally brushes with it. We can't kill main. There are some rules. We're not allowed to kill, apparently. I found out the hard way. You can't kill secondary characters. Readers get really upset and angry with you.
You mean in the romance, in the
romance
genre.
You don't have, no, you, it's a, you go, girl, you
and
go, girl.
And there comes a moment in every book where I see the character who has to die that I've gotten really fond of, and I go, oh, really?
Aww.
And then I go to bed that night, and I wake up the next day, and I go, oh, God, he's got to go, or she's got to go.
Today's the day. It's going to happen.
Yeah, and it's
not
not the kind of thing that I think, I don't know how most writers work, because I think we all work so differently, but for me, there are discoveries along the road, I don't know who's going to die. I invent a character, and then later on in the story, maybe 5 chapters later, I go, oh, God, there's my sacrifice. You know?
But you're empathizing with your victim. You're not occupying that villainous space then as a writer completely. I mean, when you're writing that, at some point you have to give up, you know, and say, okay, I'm in the bad guy's head, here we go. But you're empathizing with your victim, which I think is kind of cool, actually. That's sort of
especially if it's a character who I've gotten to know and care about and someone who's close to the protagonist. In my first book, Silent Screams, I kill off a character who's very near and dear to the protagonist. And I was a little shocked the day that I realized it had to happen. And it wasn't the kind of thing where I wanted to. I actually tried to fight it for a long time, and then I just realized that I had to do it.
Got to do it. Got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask the obvious question, okay, because you're going to all these conferences and everything else, and you're in hotels, you're in spaces with other civilians. Do you realize at any point as you're having this conversation, maybe with other writers at the table, about a great place to hide a body, or, oh, did you, you know, see that weapon
display?
I mean, are you watching the faces of other patrons as they, like, think that they're at a CIA convention, or they worry about their own safety?
I think that most of the time people who turn up at these events are either writers or they're people who want to be writers, and unless it's a really casual onlooker or someone in the restaurant who has nothing to do with your convention, the conversation wouldn't surprise them and it wouldn't disturb them at all. Because at Thriller Fest, I mean, that's what everyone, you know, R.L. Stein was the Thriller Master last year. He was, and he is the most delightful person. He came up and he gave this speech, this acceptance speech, that was like, it was so hilarious. We were rolling on the floor, all these people dressed in, you know, formal wear. We were guffawing. And the first thing that he said when he got up to the microphone, he said, "We're all engaged together in a sacred mission to spread more fear in the world," and everybody just fell down laughing, but it was true. I mean, and he writes children.
Goosebumps and I mean, you're trying to now. So here's my question: does it amp up? Because I know there's been some debate with romance and the level of erotic, the level of heat, the level of, you know, the intensity as a genre sort of evolves. Do you find people are unfortunately, or, you know, harder to shock, harder to scare, so you have to amp up certain elements? Is it about amping up the graphic, or you're balancing that with psychological elements? It's a craft. Because it can't just be a bloodbath. It has to be a crafted story.
My own particular take on that is I don't care for graphic violence. I don't like to read it, and I certainly don't like to watch it. I'll walk out of a movie if it gets graphic, gets too graphic. I have no stomach for it. I prefer psychological suspense and horror.
Okay.
And so for me, it's always about suggesting. The moment I usually cut away the moment that the killer, this last killer is pretty gruesome. He drains the blood from his victims. The one in Silent Kills, he's a vampire. He's not a supernatural vampire. He's just one of these people who thinks that he has to have blood. He has to have human blood.
Yeah.
And right. And there are people like that throughout history who have this fetish. You know, they think they have to drink human blood. Or
yes.
In his case, he ends up injecting it. But so I would never. I don't linger on the gory details because they don't interest me. And it's not that I have no judgment about people who are interested in them, and they can read other writers if that's what they're, you know, if that's what they're thinking. But it doesn't interest me personally. I'm more interested in the suggestion of terror, and it's like the famous example in Alien. One of the reasons Alien is one of the scariest movies ever is that the monster stays in the dark, right?
That's right.
And the minute you bring out
thing until the last little bit, and by the time you see it, you have already. And I'm sorry for those viewers who are squeamish. You have already peed your panties at that point. You have already peed your panties. So by the time you see the monster, you are so scared that it could come out in a clown suit, and you would just pee your panties again just because.
Right. So that's kind of the way I feel, is the more darkness you can keep hidden and the more evil you can just imply, actually the more frightening it will be. And
I'm agreeing. Yeah. So, you won't say, I think that takes so much more skill. And I'm going to probably get messages on that one. But I really think as a writer, it takes so much more skill. Well, because it's not all, show and flow, you're really having to edge it up with language and with other tools. And not just, Chainsaw Massacre. There, I see.
Yeah, and, it's just, there's a line that doesn't work for me, and it doesn't, it's so hard for me to read or see very, very graphic depictions. There's also the opposite danger, and I think that is that you get satiated, and it gets to the point where you don't, care. People get desensitized. This happens in wartime all the time.
You hear
stories about people in Iraq, and they just get desensitized to violence. They get desensitized to blood and to gore and to violence. I guess the tightrope that I feel I need to walk as a thriller writer is right between those two extremes, I want to scare people, and I don't want to desensitize
them
either.
And being desensitized to violence, as far as I'm concerned, is the scariest thing of all.
It's very scary, isn't it?
Oh my God! So see, go, and everyone, C.E. Lawrence, and of course, please, Silent Kills is available.
Silent Kills
now.
Is the latest.
It is. It's available on paperback, and of course, it is also available on Kindle. So you can
I want to also mention that my killer is a steampunk killer. So any of you steampunk fans out there, go to town because there's a whole lot about steampunk in the book.
Ooh. You did not mention that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. I love it. Well, so it's Silent Screams, Silent Victim, and Silent Kills. And then anybody who has any good silent phrases, feel free to send them to C.E. Lawrence. It's www.celawrence.com.
And there's a link on my website where you can email me.
Send her a link, and then she'll say, can I use that?
Can I have that? You're done with that? You're going to eat that?
Are you going to use that? Because I'm going to use that. Give me that. All right, baby. We'll see you next week for more canned laughter and coffee. Join us next Tuesday night, everybody, and have a safe week. Good night, everybody. Thank you, CE.
Thank you, Renee. A pleasure as always. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.